Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George on a Friday. Gotta get down on Friday, June 7th. I am Paul Gallant, and sitting in the Joe George chair, his hair all over the place, looking amazing, the great Sean Mapes.
Is this possibly, and no offense to Joe, the biggest upgrade in hair that we could come up with at the station from one seat to another?
That was offensive to Joe.
No, it's not offensive.
I mean, I've never seen Joe take his hat off.
Really?
I've never seen it off.
I don't think I've ever seen him like take it off and like kind of like wipe his brow and put it back on when he's stressed or something.
I haven't even seen that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there's just a, you know, big hole there, like a metal plate.
Just a scar.
Right. I don't know. This is the All Flow show. A lot of stuff to dive into over the course of today's show. I embarrassed myself on a level last night that I think a lot of you have been waiting for me to admit for a very long time. We'll get to that later on. This was before the Celtics smoked the Dallas Mavericks. But I want to start with something that happened yesterday on the, we'll call them today, the Killer Bees. We're not going to call them the Angry Bees or the Bitchy Bees. They had a great interview yesterday.
Some would say they killed it yesterday.
Oh, got them.
Huh?
Look at you. You're just like a father without having a child. So Keith Law of The Athletic, not everyone's favorite here in Houston, but he joined Joel Blank, Jeremy Branham yesterday, and right out of the shoot, he came out guns blazing.
I don't care if Astros fans don't like me. I was right. What if I said that was wrong? Fans don't want to hear negative things about their team. That's their right as a fan, but the team's made a lot of pretty colossal mistakes since winning that World Series. I mean, how's that Jose Abreu contract working out? How's that Rafael Montero contract working out? How is letting guys like Jeff Bagwell, with no front office experience whatsoever, make critical decisions working out? The team is clearly in worse shape today than they were the moment they won that World Series. The farm system is worse off. The Major League club is worse off. It's just been mistake after mistake after mistake. You know, the Astros fans want to claim they don't like me. Can I hand you a tissue? Really, where's the lot? What have I said that was wrong? Everything I said about this organization turned out to be true. Sorry, but not sorry.
Plat, Keith Law with the drive-by.
I mean, there's so many great parts of that. There's so many great, so much back padding. So much. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
It's nice to back pat every now and then when you've made a correct prediction. I should probably do it more myself. But Keith Law could not have been more right about the direction of the Astros in a post Jim Crane world. And now, I mean, we're sitting here with the Astros not having played yesterday. They're in Los Angeles to take on the Angels for a 3-game series tonight. I want to push back against Keith. I think we all want to push back against Keith. And this is one of those rare moments where if you're an Astros fan, or even if you're Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell, you kind of have to just sit there and take it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what, I mean, Jim Crane just has not spoken this season, so
do you blame him?
No, but I guess you could say all he's done is sit back and take it. But as far as Astros fans, like, yeah, he just kind of went down the laundry list of everything that we've been calling out this entire season. Actually, some of the stuff dating into the off season and last season with Abreu and Montero specifically. Now Montero has been pretty good recently. Uh-huh. So, you know, Rafael Montero is like, keep my name out of your mouth, Keith Law. But I don't really find anything that he did or anything that he said to be objectionable other than the general tone. If people want to be upset about the tone, I'm not even upset about the tone. Maybe this is a little bit of a bias as just as someone in the media where I'm like, what he did was good. Like, yeah, that was good radio, what he provided. And so I can't even get mad at him for that. But if you want to get mad at him for being smug, you have all the right to for the smugness. But you can't – on the facts, he's right.
Baseball writers got to stick to what they do best. And one is being smug. And look, if we're going to get a baseball writer on, I want someone who's got a little panache to him, which – good job by the Killer Bees bringing him aboard. They got a good relationship with Keith. So that's how the interview started. This is not news to anybody. We all feel this way. But all of baseball also feels the same way about the way things are run by the Astros. And Keith Law was the first to say, hey, look, I mean, it's not a great place to work. You've had the book as well that was written by Evan Drellick. So Joel asked Keith yesterday if a perception that I think pretty much everyone who's been watching the Astros on a daily basis have, if the idea that Dana Brown, Joe Espada are puppets is the perception across baseball, here's how that went.
Yes, that is 100% the perception. Now, I can't speak to, I know Dana. I haven't talked to him about his role there. I wouldn't ask a question like that. Sure. I just don't think that is appropriate, but I can tell you that that is the perception, that Jim Crane has decided that he's smarter than everybody else, and he's going to have his little cadre of advisors who he respects because they played the game, not because they are evaluators or have experience in a front office, and he is allowing them to manage, at the very least, the core major league decision.
Cadre. Oh, I'm Keith Law. I use big words. Oh. But
someone took AP English.
I know, right? Well, I did too, but yeah.
So did I.
How much do I remember from it? How much do either of us remember from it? I think for Keith Law, what he's saying, it's more confirmation of everything that we're all feeling right now, and you kind of feel helpless. You're essentially watching from afar as, I don't know, say you're a parent and your kid's being coached by a coach who sucks. You watch enough sports to know that. And yeah, you might be one of those parents that's helicoptering around and honestly being the worst. But sometimes you're seeing someone manage the thing that you love and you know it's bad, but everybody else can see it's bad and everybody else is also weighing in on it. So you sit here and I guess my big question, Sean, is if you feel like at some point this year, Jim Crane, who we haven't heard from a lot, is going to hear all of this and get a little sensitive about it, reactive or reflective about it, and perhaps change the way that he operates.
That's a tough thing to ask someone to do, especially a owner in sports, and even more especially a successful owner, sports owner. I guess you could say he changed the way he operates from going from Jeff Luhnow to and James Click to then going to this model, which is a questionable model, I'd say. Let's just have our guys run it. Let's just vibe out. So I think there's a possibility that he changes. I don't know the possibility that he changes for the better. I think that's kind of the sticking point. Is this year going to be enough of a come to Jesus year for him to get back to basics, find the next Jeff Luhnow and go from there? I just don't have faith that he would do it this after 1 year like this. I think there'll be probably more excuse making, probably more heads on spikes, and then some of it's also you kind of made your bed with this team a little bit. You kind of have to sleep in it.
Ugh. I mean, you can change your sheets, but some people choose not to.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Crane had very nice sheets he decided to change.
The nicest sheets.
He decided to let it borrow his friend's sheets that have very low thread count or something.
Yeah.
He's using Jeff Bagwell sheets right now.
Or those sweater sheets. Did you ever do those? In college, I got them. Yeah. There's like jersey sweater.
Oh, I saw other dorm rooms.
It's a sweat factory. Yeah.
Yes. Believe it or not, probably more popular in Syracuse, New York than in
definitely
Texas.
More popular up in the Northeast. But even then, I regretted it because I'm a hot sleeper. One time I got in a fight almost with my roommate. The RA had to come in because on my side of the room, there was the window. And on his side of the room, there wasn't. So this guy never got sheets. He just slept on the plastic wrap that was around the mattress when he first moved into the dorm. Yeah, I know. Sean's making a disgusted face
so
right now.
You're kind of a weirdo with the jersey sheets.
The first year, and then I learned.
He's a bigger weirdo.
Much bigger weirdo. Like,
what's going on with this guy?
So, at the very least, I don't think Jim Crane's doing the plastic sheets. But yeah, so this guy, like, he would get cold. And I was like, well, maybe buy sheets. I don't know. Maybe wash your clothes. Maybe, I don't know, try to freshen things up. And yeah, one day, I was trying to go to bed. My side of the room had the window, a big window. So I opened it up because it's like 80 degrees outside and there's no air conditioning. And he kept on coming over, reaching over my bed and closing it. And then I would just open it back up. So we did this like passive aggressive back and forth for about 20 minutes. Then he got up and he threw a temper tantrum and he went out. He got the RA, poor RA, middle of the night, brings the RA in and he starts yelling at the RA. And he says, like, I tried to talk to Paul about this one way. I tried to talk about it another way. You don't want it to go a third way. He said that to me. And I was like, well, how about the fourth way is you get sheets, number one. And number two, you wash anything because you smell like ass. And somehow, some way, despite us not knowing each other going into this roommate situation, we lasted the entire rest of the year as roommates. And it was awful.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that wasn't some major pivot point, and now he's one of your best friends? No, okay.
No, I honestly, I mean, I hope all the bad things in the world have happened to
him. There is only, I don't know, there's probably more than two ways it can go with freshman year roommates.
This was my sophomore year. This was bad. So my freshman year roommate that I chose for my sophomore year, he had transferred. And since we had a good lottery number for a good dorm at Syracuse, he left and went to another school. So I ended up with a random assignment.
Oh.
So this guy was really smart, supposedly, you know, like Jim Crane thinks he is. And yeah, I got stuck with him. It was awful.
Yeah.
Getting up at like 7 in the morning and singing like Baptist psalms on a Saturday and a Sunday. Sorry, I don't play that. Coming in at 3 a.m. at night on the weekdays because he was studying. I don't play that either. But I didn't say anything because I'm not a bitch.
Yeah. So there's two different type of stranger archetype roommates.
Yeah.
There's ones where then we became lifelong friends.
No, this did not
happen. This is the other one where you get a complete unrepentant weirdo.
Correct. And to bring it back to our sheets conversation.
Yo, yeah, what?
Astros. Jim Crane, he has changed the sheets and he thinks that he's the sheet master, you know?
He thinks his sheets don't stink?
100%. And I mean, He's sheeting it up right now. It is a big problem, and I wonder if he'll learn. And I think we're all in the same boat in thinking that, yeah, he's probably just going to continue to operate as he has. And it sucks. I really do hope that every single person that owns a professional sports organization at some point comes to the moment where they look in the mirror and they realize, yeah, what I've been doing has been hurting the team. I think that when Cal McNair and Hannah McNair officially took the reins from Bob, there was a bit of a learning process. But they clearly learned. Like, they clearly learned from past mistakes. You've seen it over the last couple of years. I feel like Tillman Fertitta might be learning. Honestly, I don't know. Really, what I like.
Tillman's is kind of a different cat.
Because he's so hands-on with the University of Houston, too. And I'm kind of cool with him being hands-on with the Cougs. It's more with the Rockets and maybe his son. I would say, hey, let's let Ime Udoka and, to an extent, Rafael Stone take care of things. But when everybody is saying, on the outside looking in, the same thing about you, that you think you know it all, and that you actually don't, and the results speak for that, I wonder if that makes Crane a little more hands-off. But time's going to tell, and yeah, the Astros got a lot of ground to make up the rest of the way. Yeah. Anyway, he is Sean Mapes in the Joe George chair. I am Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We got Austin Rodriguez behind the glass coming up next. I mean, we may as well just give you a deep steel blue pill. Does anyone want to talk about Jim Crane mismanaging the Astros? Haven't we done that like 40 times already this season? So we'll give you a deep steel blue pill because, guys, it's a football Friday. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
Little blue pills can take 30 minutes to get you ready for excitement.
So that's why we're giving you a big, deep steel blue pill.
You take the blue pill, believe whatever you want.
Get it up for the Texans and take the deep steel blue pill.
And by the way, she'll like it too.
Texans Swarm! Before that, we do have to respond to a couple of texts in our last segment talking about old Jim Crane and how the sheets be stankin'. From 281, Paul, Jim Crane has basically sheeted himself with this team, shaking my head, it smells. Yeah, you hate it when you do that to yourself. It's not good. I see what you're trying to do there, but no, we're just talking about investing in bad sheets. Jim Crane thinks he's the sheet master, and he's not. Another texter asks the question, has any of that self-awareness made Jerry Jones more hands-off? That's a fair question to ask. I think, though, that Jerry Jones doesn't necessarily view success as just winning. I think he views it as, are people talking about my team? That's why they really let everybody see what's underneath the kimono, Sean.
Yeah, that's... And it's interesting because Jim Crane is kind of going the opposite direction of Jerry Jones. Or I guess in a similar direction initially. But Jerry Jones seems like he is giving up. Maybe part of this is just he's aging out of being super hands-on. But it does seem like it is more Steven Jones. It is still Will McClay, one of their personnel guys. That's how they're drafting so well, is that he's starting to give up the reins a little bit more.
Yeah.
And
I mean, they've been good the last couple of seasons. Yeah. They just haven't won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and whereas Jim Crane, again, he initially did the smart thing, which is to give Jeff Luda, not just the smart thing of being hands-off, he selected the correct smart person to hand the ship to. Like, he gave it to someone who legitimately innovated and changed the way baseball is played.
Correct. And on top of that, who apparently has taken yet another team to the top of the table in a different sport. I mean, this businessman just comes in and he wins wherever he goes. And then on top of that, too, you know, James Click, for all the criticism we maybe gave him in the moment, Keith Law was decidedly on James Click's side towards the end of his tenure here. I mean, Click did make some decent moves. And now we're in a spot where I feel for Dana Brown in a way, where Brown's the one who's in front of the microphone, but maybe not making the decisions on the major league side of things. And Joe Espada, I mean, he's kind of being, you know, forced to work with the groceries that he's given, like it's Top Chef or something like that. So we're going to deep steal blue pill you, okay? We want to get you up and ready for the weekend. Mina Kimes of ESPN has an NFL podcast. She brought on one of our favorites, regular guests of the show, Greg Rosenthal of the NFL Network and the Around the NFL podcast. And they were talking about X factors for the Houston Texans in the 2024 season. Mina Kimes picked Derek Stingley Jr.
And I went with a player who I think has been overlooked a little bit, and that's Derek Stingley Jr. He's really good. I think it's been, he's probably because of the injury, because of the play of Sauce Gardner, who's obviously taken not long after him. I think he has flown a little bit under the radar. I think he has the potential, and this could be the year where he like really emerges as one of the true number one shutdown corners in the NFL. Last year, cornerback stats are always a little hard to parse out, but fourth lowest passer rating, fourth lowest EPA per target, first next gen stats Hawk rating, 32%, which is the percentage of targets where the nearest defender makes a play on the football. Part of the reason I went with him, Greg, is I've talked about this with regards to D'Amico Ryan's defense. They're trending in the direction of becoming the Niners defense to me, the way they play, the style, some of the schematic tendencies. And the best version of that defense is if he can be like, you know, the Charvarius Ward of the Texans defense. And I really think he can, which would make this defense really fearsome.
I don't know where Charvarius Ward stands among NFL corners, but
I mean, we're talking about a guy who's playing on the 49ers defense that we think is one of the best in the league. Stingley last year, when he got back to being healthy, was outstanding. And there's no denying that, Sean. My big question is always going to be his health. But, I mean, I even listened yesterday to Chris Long's Greenlight podcast because he had Sauce Gardner on. I wanted to hear if Sauce Gardner would acknowledge Derek Stingley Jr. Of course, Chris Long's not going to ask him, like, hey, Houston, directly. Texas-related yeah. question. Like, it's the flagship. Like, what do you think about Derek Stingley Jr.? But I kind of wish that he had acknowledged it because I thought last year, going into the season, we thought that Sauce Gardner, clearly better player than Derek Stingley. I don't think it's such a for sure conclusion because Stingley last year got takeaways. And yeah, you want to shut down one side of the field, but it's also nice when you flip the field.
Yeah, there is value to just taking the ball away. Just like he's not even necessarily high risk, high reward like some other cornerback, like a Marcus Peters type, or you know, going back Asante Samuel type, where it is he is jumping routes to get interceptions, but sometimes no, he's just making plays on the ball where it is him and a wide receiver going up for a ball and he comes down with it. So that is. A big part of why he has closed the gap on his fellow 2022
yeah.
draft pick, Sauce Gardner, and why when we talk about him, we don't really have many notes as far as when he's on the field. It's just how often can he be on the field. He can do a lot for himself and make himself a lot of money if he plays 16 games this year.
Want a little more deep steel blue pilling right here? This is for me. On a team that has a bunch of really good wide receivers, I think Derek Stingley would be capable of playing wide receiver in the NFL.
Whoa.
I think he would be capable of it. I think he's got great hands. And
yeah,
I think he
definitely has the hands for it.
And he knows how to, like, obviously his route running, we'll see. But I would assume that as a cornerback, if you can stick with the receivers that are doing all these crazy little movements to get open, I would assume that you have the agility to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's the idea of, the wide receivers know where they're going.
Yeah.
The corner is in main. Reacting. You're reacting to it.
It's like more difficult, honestly, in some cases.
By the way, Tre'Varius Ward last year led the league in pass deflections with 23 and had 5 interceptions.
Okay, so that is the model that you're trying to beat.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's what Mina Kimes had to say about Derek Stingley, her Texans X Factor. Greg Rosenthal had another choice that we discussed yesterday on the show as his X Factor, a newcomer to the team.
I wrote down Stingley.
For similar reasons to, by the way, what I said about Stingley in the Niners defense. So,
well, exactly. That's it. When Al-Shaair played in San Francisco, it was like, wow, is this guy one of the best linebackers in the league? And you kind of know, okay, he's probably not. It's about the defense, too. But he's so physical. There was a lot of redundancies with him and Dre Greenlaw. And Dre Greenlaw is amazing. So you didn't need both of them. I get why he got more money. I thought he held up well. And I talked to people in Tennessee about it, too, last year. That defense had a lot of issues. He's not like an amazing coverage linebacker, but he was very steady for them. They were happy with him. They were hoping to get him back, and I think he was really happy to rejoin D'Amico Ryan's.
I was going to say, if there's one guy in the NFL I trust to coach up linebackers and also choose good linebackers, it would be D'Amico Ryan.
Yeah. And also we had that story yesterday where Will Anderson told us that Azeez Al-Shaair told him to stop bleeping pouting.
Yeah. Yeah, so leadership as well as knowing the system and being awesome when you're in that system. So, yeah, Azeez Al-Shaair, what a 2 days of PR.
Seriously. I'm glad that I have his name down pat now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time when I saw them sign him, I'm like, oh, damn, this is going to be one of those ones where I have trouble.
Well, I remember when he was on the Titans and you just see the name and you're like, huh, that's interesting. And you don't, like, fully put your brain to pronouncing it in your head. And then they end up signing him. Like, I guess I'll have to learn how to pronounce this now.
I'm looking now off the top of my head. I do not know Azeez's name meaning. It means, ooh, beloved friend, comrade, dear, the servant of the mighty.
All right. Strong name. For Azeez Al-Shaair. Maybe he's the servant of D'Amico Ryan.
Whoa.
There we go.
Who is really mighty right now? Come on, guys. Get excited. It's a Friday.
He's our beloved friend.
Our beloved
now,
friend.
Now that he's taking a leadership role with the Texans.
there's a bar that I frequent, and one of the guys who works there, I swear, looks just like D'Amico Ryans. Just like him. And I think he's told me that, I think, before. Because the last time I was out there on a Friday, this is McIntyre's. Okay. I saw Gerard Johnson there, and I didn't want to bother him, even though Gerard Johnson did, you know, help my 40 time up. No, you got to respect a Texans coach.
Yes.
And if you talk with somebody, I don't want to interrupt it. But, yeah, there's a guy who works at McIntyre's who looks a little bit like D'Amico Ryans.
I like that
the chrome dome.
You've walked it back to looks kind of like him.
Well, again, like it's going to be considered problematic.
Yeah,
brain,
it gets
right?
in dangerous territory.
Yeah, it you does. Get in Trust
especially,
me, though.
Especially if we see a picture of him and it's like just a different black guy.
that would be bad. That would not
just
be
a bald
good.
Guy.
Just a bald guy.
So in Steven Nelson, would Steven Nelson call this guy Milk Dud Man?
Yes, he definitely would call him a Milk Dud Man. He's a smaller guy, too.
Oh, okay. So definitely.
Same. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Steven Nelson, still unemployed.
Still unemployed.
Anyway, Sean Mapeson for Joe George. I am Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. You want to get in, 713-780-3776 is how you call. It's how you text. You can join us on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, or on YouTube at ESPN. Houston, at Gallant says on Twitter, at Sean A. Mapes. Look, we're going to have some fun today, so we might even introduce a little Ask Us Anything, just for the sake of things, but I do feel like we need to condition you for Football Fridays, because the Astros are not going anywhere right now, so we need to make you believe in the idea of a Football Friday. We know, this station talks too much football. No, we need to start talking football. Stick around. It is Gallant and George.
ESPN 97.5. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
We're going to add a little Ask Gallant and George with Sean Mapeson for Joe George Anything on this Friday. It's a slow day. There's no Astros game last night to react to. We did have an NBA Finals Game 1 that we'll discuss in the next segment. I don't want to annoy you guys too much with my love of the Boston Celtics. A couple of questions from King of All Twitches. I think this one's the best one. How many shots is too many shots, Sean Mapes? I think it's 3. I think once you've had 3, you're in the danger zone.
So 4 is too many.
No, I think it's 3.
The
third one is where
the tipping point.
You're going to hit a wall hard, depending on how quickly you take those 3 shots.
Yeah, the timing obviously matters, but I think over under 3.5 is a good line where you get equal money on both sides.
There's nothing worse than being out with people who want to get you shots the day after the derecho, that Friday where we had, let's just say, issues getting it on.
The radio.
No, we're not talking about any rumors about me that Sean now is being pulled into. No. No. We're not talking about that. What we're talking about is that day, and I went to this place that I hate, down the street bar, but I go there all the time. The people that work there are great. It's just always dead there. Like, it's a nice bar. It's like not my vibe. It's no one's ever there. And these people got me like 4 shots. And then I was trying to explain to them how I asked someone out on LinkedIn, and they were giving me crap about it, but they wouldn't let me finish the story. And I got mad and I just stormed off. You know why I stormed off? Because I had 4 shots.
Yeah.
I got unnecessarily angry.
That's a good question. I think we got the...
Do you have a favorite shot?
Not really. A free one.
Yeah, that's my favorite shot. That's the correct answer. The ones that you don't have to buy. That is such a great answer, Sean. Sean Mapes is in for Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 on YouTube at ESPN Houston, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I want to keep this Houston Texans hype going, okay? Because it's a Football Friday, and the Astros, suck. They suck right now, okay? By our standards, they suck.
We're previewing an Angels-Astros game.
No.
Astros, you need to be... I'll even say within 3 games of .500 for us to just preview a series.
Yes, and especially if it's against the mark-ass Angels.
Yes.
You better sweep this one.
I get it's on the road. You better sweep this one. You better not be going all James Harden in L.A. You better sweep this one. L.A.'s fun this time of year. It's hot as balls here. It's nicer in L.A., I'm assuming. But this is a business trip, and you better come away with three wins. I'm not accepting anything other than a sweep this weekend.
Wow. Okay.
Well, we shouldn't. We shouldn't. They have one sweep this year. It's insane. How? How?
They're not that good.
Exactly.
That's how.
That's how. And it's annoying that they're not that good. So there you go. More deep steel blue pillin. Okay, guys? Lewis Riddick. You might remember him from a brief tenure on Monday Night Football. You might remember him from NFL Live, which I think he's very good on. I think he's a good analyst. Lewis Riddick is really feeling, like many people, the Houston Texans going into 2024.
CJ Stroud is that dude. End of story. He's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is going to ascend. And he's going to ascend like a rocket ship. And it's going to be fun to watch. Whoa. Number two, look, I'll tell you what. There isn't a coach in the NFL who I would say I have more confidence in his ability to snuff out and be able to kind of put a lid on any kind of smoldering fire more so than that guy right there. More so than that guy. Because you know what? He is like the perfect crossover from... He still looks like a Mike Backer.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen his arms? Have you seen the way this dude looks right now? He could probably step in and give you 10 to 15 first and second down reps. And on top of it, he's so grounded. He's so intelligent. He has such a command. I ain't worried about nothing in Houston.
Whoa!
Nothing. The McNair family hit this ball so far out of the park with hiring D'Amico Ryans, and the way they have added to this football team this year, I'm not worried about anything. Stephon Diggs is the least of my concerns. I just want this team to stay healthy and let them go on and continue to improve. D'Amico Ryans will handle it, whatever comes.
We might have to keep power rankings of NFL analysts. Who is the highest on the Houston Texans?
The believer power rankings?
I don't think anyone's higher than Lewis Riddick right there. Holy crap.
Undisputed number one in the nation.
I mean, that is making me say, wait a second, hang on. Too many people are buying into the Texans.
It's also just, he was talking about his arms.
Look how hot he is.
Yes. He stopped just short of that. I disagree with him with that he could take 10 snaps in an NFL game tomorrow. First or second down snaps.
Probably not.
I'll push back a little bit.
It's a different league, and are we asking D'Amico Ryans to cover people? If this is old school football where the middle linebackers are supposed to be like just absolute barbarians smashing the A-gaps, okay, that I'd feel a little bit different about.
Yeah.
The Brandon Spikes era. That's my favorite guy who's like, he's only good at smashing the gaps. Yes. He's really good at
it. The guys that can only go forward. Like
just forward. You do not go anywhere else. You're screwed otherwise.
But to speak to the point he's making, I get what he's saying with D'Amico Ryans. And I think it's something that we've talked about where he is the former player kind of archetype who, and even if you want to go former player who's not either an offensive mind or a former quarterback. He is basically what you would want out of a head coach with just the mentality and the leadership that he brings. He has 28 leadership books in his office, whatever the number was. I forgot.
He does. They're all generally the same book. I think it's 16, official number. Still, that's a lot.
Yeah. But obviously he reads them because he's a good leader. And yeah, I guess I have some things to be worried about in Houston, but the head coach is definitely not one.
I agree with you there. Give me something that you're worried about.
The cornerbacks.
Okay, so
I need more than three good OTAs out of Kamari Lassiter to become a believer.
That's a fair point.
Just pass defense in general, but specifically if you're going to put a fine point on it, what do they do there?
I was pretty excited hearing DJ Bien-Aimé, and you can check out that interview up on our YouTube channel and on the Golan and George podcast. But I was really excited with what he had to say about Kamari Lassiter because I was also seeing all of that hype. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, let's get somebody who's a little more grounded to discuss it.
Yeah.
But I'm with you as well. Okay, it's a couple of practices.
And it's good. Great signs.
It also could be a sign that Jeff Okuda and CJ Henderson are washed.
And we didn't really hear too many positive. There wasn't an outpouring of positivity about Okuda or Henderson. Not just talking with DJ, but just with what we've heard from people, other people at practice.
Correct. Exactly. So the good news is, hey, maybe they found a pretty good player in the second round, considering they were in that spot in the draft where everyone seemed to be trading up in front of them to get cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. If they actually ended up with a guy who's really, really good, even if he doesn't fit the archetype where he's not that tall and he's not that fast, at least from a 40-time perspective, great. But yeah, we also pump the brakes a little on that.
And it, why it's cornerback specifically instead of safety, not just that I think Petrie could just be good enough at a certain point, and Ward, when he's out there, can be good enough, where I'm not sure if Okuda, Henderson, or Laster can be good enough. But we talk about these guys with cornerback, the second cornerback position. The guy who's number one, penciled in number one, rightfully so, as Derek Stingley Jr., who,
exactly,
go back to, was the last segment, maybe the
segment? Yeah, last segment.
Last segment, we're talking about, we have no issues with him on the field. Our only issue is he's not on the field enough.
Yeah.
So now you're talking about your, if Stingley misses a game or two, or even has an injury like he had last year where he misses the first half of the year, now you're talking about Kamari Laster, Jeff Okuda, CJ Henderson being your starters.
Yeah. If he gets hurt, you might be screwed.
Yes.
And you could eventually figure it out by the end of the year, because that's generally how things work. If players get more playing time,
the cream rises to the top.
The cream rises to the top, and the players generally gel. Usually, like, the team, especially one coached by D'Amico Ryans, I assume it's going to get better as the season goes along. But with the quarterbacks you're going up against, if Derek Stingley gets hurt, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard to stop those teams.
And I trust D'Amico Ryans to have... I don't think D'Amico Ryans will ever coach a bad defense while he's the head coach of the Texans.
I hope not.
I don't think he, like, I'm saying like 20th and under. I can't see a situation where he's 20th or under. The Texans are 20th or under in defense with D'Amico Ryans as the head coach. It's just specifically what this team might be bad, or what it looks like this team will be bad against, is specifically what they're going to get tested at the most.
Correct.
This season with the quarterbacks that they play on the schedule.
From the 832, a text. Joe George's guarantee that the Texans winning a Super Bowl in Stroud's rookie contract should be the concern. That dude does not have a great track record, especially since he cursed the Astros. Now, Joe is not here to explain the cursing of the Astros. No, listen, we like a good meaty take.
Yeah.
I don't do as many of them as I used to, because there's a little bit of me being gun shy. I don't want to be wrong, but I like Joe putting that on the table.
I also like a take that it will take 3 years for us to say if he's wrong or not.
Exactly.
Chances are we'll forget.
That's the best way to do it.
Chances are we'll forget. If he's wrong, we'll forget. If he's right, I guess we'll remember. He'll definitely remember.
Exactly.
He'll remind us. And so it's sneaky a good position to be in if you're Joe. Now, as far as the jinx allegations, that's a bad spot to be in.
Because
you don't want to be the jinx.
You don't want to be the jinx, but, I mean, jinxes aren't real.
True, but you don't want people to perceive you as a jinx, and that becomes real. The perception is...
Maybe, you
don't want the perception of being a jinx.
I don't know. I think the perception of the jinx being a concern, Sean, I think back in the 1600s, say, in northern Massachusetts, during the Salem witch trials, like that...
You want to tell them not to be worried about being...
But, you know...
Perception?
That's
perception is reality,
that's,
Paul.
That's, Sean, that's 300 years ago, though. Aren't we better than this now?
No! No, we're not! Are you crazy?
It is an Ask Gallant and Mapes Anything Friday. Sean Mapes is sitting in the Joe George chair. Coming up next, I have an admission to make. It's a very embarrassing one that a lot of people have been claiming is a reality. After something that happened last night as I watched the NBA Finals at the Highway Cantina, we will discuss it next here. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
NBA Finals Game 1 last night. The Boston Celtics, who I am wearing green in honor of today, massacred the Dallas Mavericks in a game that was honestly never really close except for a brief stretch in the third quarter where some of my Dallas Maverick fan friends who are from Houston, weirdly, decided to text me, "Oh, you nervous?" But the Celtics won 107-89, and a lot of it had to do with Kristaps Porzingis being unbelievable, specifically at the end of the first quarter. Sean, there was a moment where I kept on hearing Mike Breen, J.J. Redick, and Doris Burke mentioning how gassed Kristaps was. And as they were mentioning how gassed he was, Porzingis proceeded to do all sorts of hustle plays, blocking shots and making every single shot that he took with his weird-ass three-point attempt that looks like someone playing beer pong. He was so good in that game to the point where, as excited as I am that Boston won, I feel like there's no way that Porzingis can bring that level again, right? I mean, that was maybe the best game he has ever played in his life because of where it happened.
Especially, maybe it's not the best game, but it's definitely the best first quarter that you could have asked for. In the first quarter, Kristaps Porzingis was 4-for-5 from the field, 1-for-2 from three. So the only miss he had was a three-pointer. And I'm going to guess because most of his threes last night were like 4 steps behind the line. So it was probably a pretty tough three-pointer that he missed.
It was a line drive shot. I remember thinking, oh, he didn't get his legs into it.
Because it's also, I mean, for him, you're just line driving it down, yeah, basically.
Just throwing it straight.
He had 2 blocks in the first quarter, 11 points, and his plus-minus was a plus 16 for the quarter.
Insane.
In a quarter that I believe the Celtics won by 17. So he truly was the difference in that first quarter. And really, that first quarter lead was – they built on it a little bit in the second quarter, and Dallas came back in the third, like you said, just enough to have all these Mavericks fans text you. But I think really the game was won and lost. Like, we can talk about what happened in the third quarter, the run that the Celtics went on the third quarter to bring it back to 20. In my mind, it was Kristaps Porzingis at the basically the second half of the first quarter.
Yeah.
That was the game right there.
Pretty much, right. To a point where I'm excited, but still a 7-game series.
Yeah.
Kyrie could not have played worse. The Mavericks role players could not have played worse. The only thing I'd be nervous about if I'm a Mavericks fan is really that Porzingis looked like he was limping a little bit. That's
or
really
Luka.
Excuse me, yeah, Luka, yeah. Confusing my white Euros. Yeah,
be careful.
A little racist there.
A lot of people are going to be, we're texting in right there, and they're like, oh, okay, he admitted it.
We were touching on this before, after yesterday's show, Sean. What are lessons that the Rockets could learn from this game?
Yes. In honor of Jabari Smith at the pre-finals press conference asking Jalen, Jason Tatum.
Oh, you're confusing two black guys. Oh,
because they're both named Jay. he asked him what he could learn and what advice that he would have for someone in Jabari Smith's shoes. And so we thought, hey, why don't we just build this out for the entire team? It's also a way to do the oldest trick in the radio book, which is localizing. The NBA Finals or localizing the Super Bowl. So, what are some NBA Finals lessons? Do you have one or do you want me to go first?
I have one.
Okay.
With that third pick, I don't care who it is, draft a European.
I like that. There's a lot of them.
Draft a European. Because this draft supposedly sucks. Okay. Well, I don't necessarily believe that that's the case for these European players. And
yeah.
I mean, if we learned anything in last night's game, Kristaps Porzingis once was the unicorn, and he looked like the unicorn last night. And Luka, despite whatever was going on with his knee, still had a pretty good game, all things considered. And
yeah, he 30-10? Oh, only 1 assist, which I guess speaks to his teammates.
Exactly.
A little bit. Yeah.
So give me a European player. I literally do not care who it is, but look, you did very well in last year's draft drafting American. Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore. looks pretty good.
USA. USA.
But there's a lot of, like, I don't know. I just got questions about the state of American basketball as a whole. So my lesson learned from last
night, like that,
Sean, is draft the Euro. What do you have?
I'm looking at the top. Well, first, I'm looking at the top of the one of the mock drafts. Mm-hmm. So we got Alexander Sarr, who plays in Australia but is French. We have Richard, I don't know how to say this dude's last name. He's also French.
Okay, so
we got two Frenchies in the top two. We got Topic.
Okay.
Nikola Topic. That's,
where's he from?
Let me look it up. But that jumps out to me because, hey, we have a good history with Nikolas in recent history. And we also got a Matthias Bezulis. So I just named four foreigners.
Let's
go. We have the third pick. Guaranteed there will be one of these foreigners. Nikola's Serbian, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. So I like it. There's okay. a lot of good options.
Good.
At number three. The Buzdelis is from Illinois.
that does sound like he would be perhaps be from overseas.
Okay.
Give me a lesson, Sean.
A lesson is, not only do you, it's going to be from the Boston Celtics because.
For the Rockets.
For the Rockets because, you know.
Localizing.
Celtics South.
Yeah, that's true.
my lesson would be, and this is maybe a little bit contrary to what we think the plan should be or will be for the draft, but it is maintain depth as a team. And this is from the Boston Celtics, how they can throw out their Brown, Tatum, White, Holiday, Horford, Porzingis.
That's so many guys.
And even Sam Hauser was out there.
Hauser hit a nice three, right.
And was playing pretty good
defense.
Whenever
I see Hauser, I'm like, wait, is that Gordon Hayward? No, it's not.
Yeah, so but I would say that you don't want to be one of these. And the Mavericks are pretty deep. They have at least seven guys that you feel good about. But the depth that is being shown by the Celtics, and especially because they're a team that doesn't have that, oh my God, one in a million type of generational talent, like Luka is for the Mavericks. But Tatum, I would say, is a step, maybe even two steps kind of below that level. They have Brown, who's also in that, like, okay, he is no doubt a superstar in the league, but he's not one of, capital T, those guys. And so if the Rockets aren't, and maybe this depends on how good Şengün can be or how good Jaylen can be, but right now it doesn't look like they have one of those guys who step in the league immediately and they take it over. This might be something where they need to follow that kind of have a Brown, have a Tatum, have a Porzingis now, and they trade for Holiday and White, so it's a little bit different there. But fill in this talent and have five guys. I mean, we talk about the core six, and maybe that's a little bit too many to be a core, but that actually is a good way to think about it, of maintaining some depth and not becoming one of these top heavy teams.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, too, also the just looking at the Celtics, maybe some patience. You know, I know there's some people out there, myself at times, that are wondering about Jalen Green's future here. But, you know, over time, we saw Jaylen Brown go from being a guy who everyone was wondering why he was taken as early as he was,
yeah,
to being, honestly, the guy that I trust the most on the Celtics in a crunch time moment.
And he was awesome.
He was great.
In the third quarter.
Yeah.
He had the huge dunk.
He needed two big
blocks.
Right.
He blocked a Derek Jones dunk.
Him blocking Kyrie Irving, I mean, make a statue of that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, blocked Kyrie. So, yeah, Brown was awesome. I know it's only game one. But I'm already getting ready for the who's the NBA Finals MVP discourse.
Go. Yeah,
because nothing people love more than not giving it to the best player on a team.
That's true. Love the Iguodala, the person.
Yeah, Iguodala, yeah. Even Kawhi when he won. So like there's enough discourse for Tatum. Might not be yours.
Yeah, I don't think it
after
will
game one it's not.
I don't think it will be even if they do win. I do think it's probably going to be Brown, maybe Porzingis. The odds on Porzingis, mybookie.ag promo code 975. Very curious what they are right now. All right, I have a confession to make. I wanted to tell Sean about this to surprise him. So when I went to go watch last night's game at the Highway Cantina, I usually parallel park in this one spot so I don't have to pay for parking.
Good.
While I was trying to park for parallel park, I went a little bit over the curb. When I went over the curb, my car got stuck in a ditch. Literally got stuck in a ditch. Like, the wheels got stuck in. and there was so much mud underneath it that as I was trying to reverse out of it, it made it worse and worse. Ugh. So I'm in my car, and you know me when I'm angry, but I don't think you've seen me really have a rage storm.
Especially road rage.
Yes. Yeah, so I was grab my phone, I'm throwing it, I'm swearing as loud as I can, because I tried for 10 minutes to get out of the spot. Luckily, Houston is legitimately the kindest, most generous city. Multiple people saw me, and they apparently are from the country, and they said, hey, we can help you out. So somehow they found some wooden planks. Like a homeless guy came over to help me with some wooden planks. And I wish I had cash to give to him. So we tried to put the wooden planks under the car. And this is as the NBA Finals Game 1 has begun. So I'm really angry because I got there, like as I always do, 3 minutes before the start of the game. And I have it on my phone and I'm kind of watching it. But the planks don't work.
Really?
The planks didn't work. And eventually I just told everybody, okay, stop, like... So I called AAA, and I watched the first probably 20 minutes of NBA Finals Game 1 action on the phone in my car as I was waiting for AAA to come and to pull my car out of the ditch. I'm going to tweet out the picture, at Galant says, at Sean A. Vapes, because my brother-in-law's brother is in town, and he came over, and he videotaped it to send to my sister, who's going to make fun of me now, too. So this sucks.
Great.
So I'm officially a bad driver. Everyone has been saying, you thought it was going to be another rumor I was going to confirm on this stuff. No, no. I am officially a bad driver. I tried to parallel park on the side of a road in a ditch, and I got stuck, and I'm so embarrassed. I'm a terrible driver.
That's tough. That's a tough one. A little bit of bad luck, but also bad scouting, I would say, as far as scouting the spot. I know it's normally a good spot for you, but, you know, you got to adjust. At this level, it's the NBA Finals, Paul.
The NBA Finals.
You got to be ready to adjust.
Got to make it happen.
And so, yeah, that's a tough one. I'm waiting with bated breath to see that picture.
Something else happened at the Highway Cantina that I'll discuss later in the show. He's Sean Mapes. I'm Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George with Sean in for Joe on a Friday. Also, ask Paul and Sean anything. We'll work in some more of your questions. Up next... Oh, man, Keith Law, he was so good on the Killer Bees yesterday. We got more bazingas from him to get to. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.